The world doesn't need a handful of people living perfectly sustainably. It needs billions of us living imperfectly sustainably, you know, and just doing what we can to...
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips, how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. The guest on the show today is Russ Avery, and he is an eco-entrepreneur and specialist marketer for sustainable businesses. He was brought up in Helensburgh on Scotland's northwestern coast. Growing up under the influence of David Attenborough on TV, he had an outdoor childhood. Because of this, he developed an early appreciation of the natural world that called him into his future career. He is a sustainable marketing consultant, and both of these are close to my passions and interests, so we had to be really careful not to get carried away. If you'd listened to my previous shows, you will know I can easily go down the odd rabbit hole with my guests. In education, Russ was a natural with languages and studied both French and Spanish to advanced level. University followed, and breaking the pattern, he chose a degree in French and Russian. However, a language degree is not that vocational, and on leaving Exeter University in 2007, his future was unclear. By 2009, he'd settled on the idea of sustainability, so taking a course with the Open University, the door was opened to his first break in the industry. That first appointment was with SeaWeb, which is a small ocean conservation charity. They raise awareness of overfishing, sea acidification, and they bridge the gap between science and communications. Our conversation follows how Russ found his ikigai when he moved into the sustainability sector. This is what ultimately started his marketing consultancy to help sustainable businesses communicate well. Russ is a natural connector of people, so we had a wide-ranging chat. We covered how social media and networking played a pivotal role in his business journey. Naturally, we talked about sustainability and how business is changing. We talked about how you can make a difference in your own life with just a straightforward change of attitude. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Russ Avery. Now today, I am really excited today to be with Russ Avery. Now, I've known Russ for a while on social media. I've seen him around on LinkedIn and stuff, and I know he is an eco-entrepreneur and specialist marketer for the sustainable businesses and industry. And it is an area that I am deeply passionate about. So I am so pleased to have you on the program. Thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Paul. It's great to be here.
So look, this is Life, Passion and Business. And it's all about that aspect of passion and how we bring that into our daily life. So you're in the eco world. Were you always there? Was this always a passion for you?
It was always a passion for me, but I haven't always been here, no. So my journey into kind of broad term sustainability as a career started back in 2010. So it has been 11 years now, but I had a few years where I was lost after university
Okay, let's go back there, because it's the discovery of these things is always an interesting journey. So so when you were a young lad, what did you want to do when you grew up, when you got big?
Yeah, I love that question, because if I'm truthful about the answer, it always makes people laugh. So when I was a young lad, and by the way, I grew up on the west coast of Scotland, which I'll come back to later, because that plays a part in the journey. But when I was a young lad, I wanted to be Indiana Jones.
Oh, fantastic. Adventure and archaeologist.
Exactly. So I wanted the hat, the whip, and I wanted to go on adventures like that. And then that kind of, when I grew up a bit more and worked out that he wasn't really Indiana Jones, he was Harrison Ford, I wanted to be an actor, basically.
And he wasn't a good archaeologist either.
No, he wasn't. Absolutely. So that was my childhood dream. So that never happened. So the Hollywood dream will have to, you know, wait another day or two.
Well, you've got the looks for it. You've got the youth and looks on your side. You might get there. You never know.
Well, that's very kind. I certainly don't feel like it at the moment, Paul. Trust me.
So, okay. The acting career passed you by. So you went to university and did something, obviously, no doubt.
I did, yeah. So, you know, skip ahead 18 years and I found myself at the University of Exeter studying French and Russian language. So, you know, completely different to anything.
He's actually French and Russian. Russians, that's pretty serious, stuff, isn't it? Studying Russian.
Yeah, Russian's pretty serious. French is definitely the easier
French
one.
French is beautiful. Russian's a bit... Ugh.
Yeah, a lot of people say that, but I actually find Russian to be an incredibly beautiful language. I think you have to have studied it and have lived there for a year, maybe like I did.
Are you still a speaker of Russian?
No, my Russian is so rusty now, so don't even dare throw that curveball at me.
It has to be asked, doesn't it? I mean, when someone says I speak Russian, you've got to ask them, haven't you?
Yeah, so it's funny. I honestly... you know, I know we're coming to this, but in terms of doing degrees that end up being useless is the wrong word, but, you know, non-vocational degrees. I mean, I haven't spoken Russian since pretty much since 2007 when I graduated, because I've obviously left university with a languages degree, but I had no intention whatsoever of being a teacher, a translator, an interpreter, or anything where I would directly use those two languages, but in a roundabout kind of way, of course, they have actually come in useful because I ended up in marketing. So having a good grasp of language is useful for marketing, where I have to write every day for a living and tell stories and stuff. So yeah.
Hmm. So clearly, I mean, what drove you to that? I mean, there must have been a passion or some, what drove you to do languages? There must have been something in there for you for that.
Sure. Yeah, there was definitely passion there. Also it was from what I was good at school. So I was always good at languages at school. They came very naturally to me. So the schools I went to, I started learning French from age 8 and I carried that all the way through to A levels, obviously. And I did Spanish from age 13 up to A levels. So I did A levels in French and Spanish. And I went to the kind of school where you just went to university. There was no question of whether or not you were going to university. That was the done thing. That was your path. Mm-hmm. So because that's the way it was for me, I chose, which I'm guessing a lot of people do, obviously, I just wanted to do what I was good at and what came naturally to me. So the easier path, of course, Paul, would have been to do French and Spanish at university, having just done them both at A level.
Yeah.
But I thought that would be a bit too boring. So I decided to take up Russian from scratch at university.
That's a brilliant thing, actually. I mean, you say it's not worth it. I mean, it is worth it because, I mean, you don't know what could have happened in the world. I mean, Russia could have been in ascendance by the time you got out. And, you know, having a Russian language would have been really useful. You don't know. I mean, like, yeah, Chinese, if you studied Chinese at the moment in the last few years, you would actually be quite valuable in the world, I would think, at this point.
So, yeah, I think so.
You never know where these things lead to, do you, really? And I'm sure they led. So where does sustainability come up in this? Because, I mean, you left university with language degrees. Was there any interest in sustainability at that time?
Yes, there was. So it's always been a kind of an interest of mine. And that does go right back to childhood years, growing up surrounded by beautiful nature on the west coast of Scotland in a town called Helensburgh near Loch Lomond. And so I've always been very outdoorsy. I've always had a respect for the natural world, which I've got my parents to thank for that. And I know it's a cliche, but he's a man who has inspired countless people. But, you know, we grew up in a household where we watched David Attenborough every Sunday afternoon and evening when he was on TV. So, you know, passionate about animals, nature, the natural world from a very young age. But then it was always just that, like something I was interested in and passionate about, but not something I'd ever acted on. And then when I left university and I did various temp jobs for 2 years, graduating into a recession, that was fun. Did various temp jobs for a couple of years. Did none of them took my fancy. They weren't for me. So when I took a step back in 2009 and thought, okay, this is ridiculous. I've been graduated for 2 years now. What do I actually want to do for a living? I decided to try and get a job in inverted commas, sustainability, whatever that looked like, even though I had nothing to show for it by way of academic qualifications or anything. So what I did was I decided that that probably would be useful. So I went to the Open University to check out what courses they had. And I did a certificate in natural and environmental sciences, just so that I at least had something on my CV to prove that I was interested in this when I was applying for jobs in it. And that was actually a fantastic course. So it was a distance learning course, really interesting. Talked a lot about the climate crisis and stuff. And this is 2009, so 12 years ago now, but really interesting course material. And it worked because I think having that on my CV probably did help me at least a little bit to get my first job in the sector, which was in 2010 for a small ocean conservation charity called SeaWeb. And that's where my journey began.
Wow, that's nice. That's a nice story, actually. Yeah, I mean, I've always had an interest in sustainability, but from a technical perspective, and I was never that studious at school. I didn't do university. I went straight into work. But prior to that, I was always really fascinated by solar panels and the technology around it all. So that's where I've always been in it. And I've never actually followed it up. I've always been, well, I'm not an engineer. Marketer, what do I know about this sort of stuff? So that's where I've gone with it, really. I stuck out of, didn't go into the industry, but I have a very active interest in it, and I'm very knowledgeable about it, which I guess gets me into trouble occasionally because I talk about it quite a bit. But yeah, it's fascinating that you're that journey. So where did that lead you then? Obviously within this charity for a while. That's, you know, what is the charity do?
So they're an ocean conservation charity, which focuses on certain areas such as the overfishing problem, ocean acidification, lots of different hot topics like that. Sorry, that was no pun intended, honestly. Lots of different topics like that. And what they do is they try and help to bridge the gap between science and communications and stuff. So it's actually really interesting. And so sustainability came first, marketing, which is what I do, which we'll come on to, came second. So I joined SeaWeb as an administrative assistant, so helping out with lots of different things. But it was at SeaWeb in 2010 when I discovered social media, which was really taking off. So I can hand on heart say that I really do have social media to thank for kind of a huge part of my career. Because it was my entryway into like properly discovering marketing and finding that I really enjoyed it. And I just volunteered at SeaWeb to start managing the Twitter account and doing some stuff on YouTube. And it was all pretty new still in 2010. You know, Facebook had been around for maybe 4 years by then, but not many businesses were using it.
Social media in those days, I mean, I was around that point when I was in social media at that time, and it was like, it was the Wild West. You could throw stuff anywhere and you would just get people buying stuff off you. So it really was the Wild West for making money and being involved in stuff.
Absolutely. So I fell into it that way. And then I started cluing myself up about wider marketing, not just the social media side of it. Took to it very naturally in terms of, honestly, Paul, like everything. So like blogging, working out how to build simple websites using WordPress, things like that, and just content marketing, which came along, and then SEO and stuff, and just found I was really interested in it. And as we all know, when you're really interested in something, learning it doesn't really seem that difficult because it's a passion. It seems more like a hobby and a fun thing to do. And then 2 years at SeaWeb, led me to joining a small sustainable startup called Carbon Credentials, which honestly the stars really aligned for me at that point. And that's when it was amazing, really. So basically my wife and I were moving out of central London to Farnham here in Surrey, which is where we still live. So I had to leave my job at SeaWeb anyway and started looking for a new job. And bizarrely, I mean, it's a relatively small town in Surrey, about 45 minutes outside of London. bizarrely, on one of the job sites where I was looking at, I found a job for a marketing and communications manager for this small company called Carbon Credentials. And I thought, I'm shooting way above my station here by even applying for this. But I went for it anyway, because it's where we were moving to. And I rocked up. I managed to get an interview. I rocked up. And would you know it, they weren't a big company at all. They were five people in a converted barn in Farnham, by Farnham Station. And so actually the fact that I was, you know, not at marketing and communications manager level,
yeah,
didn't really matter, because they were a startup of five people. So it all worked out kind of perfectly.
And you were local.
and I was local. So that really helped. I told them I was moving there like the next week. So they like that. And that was my first big job, which was the proper launch pad of my career. And a lot to thank for Carbon Credentials for where I am now, because I was with them for 4 years. And as I said, I think I was like employee number six, based in Farnham. And when I left 4 years later, the company was 55 people big, based on Regent Street in London. So that's quite a journey.
Did you have to go to Regent Street?
Yeah, I started having to commute, yeah.
Oh, no, that's a bummer.
it was totally worth being part of that growth journey. Sure. But I had a year in Farnham with them before I had to start doing the commute to London. And then I had to go in 4 days a week and could do a day from home. So it wasn't terrible.
No. But there we go. So anyway, that sounds like you were certainly following your passion, and the universe aligned for you in that respect, by the sounds of it.
Absolutely. I think luck is a funny word, isn't it? Because there's that saying, or that something, you know, the harder I work, the luckier I get. And there's a lot of truth to that, because actually, whereas before I've said luck about things, whether it's been someone great that I've met at an event, actually it wasn't luck. It's because I could be bothered to get out of bed that day and go to the event when maybe I really didn't feel like it. You know, it's because I've put myself out there and actively gone into it.
You never know what's there for you.
Exactly.
And I really believe now is that, you know, life happens for you, not to you.
100%. So I agree with that.
Everything happens for you. And even when it's the shit bits, well, it happened for you. Now, what did you learn out of it?
Yeah. Exactly.
And I know they're not nice. The shit bits ain't good, because I've been there. but when you look back, sometimes the shit bits were, but the reward that came later was far greater than the depth of despair you ended up in.
Yeah, there's always a lesson in the shit bits, for sure. Completely agree. But yeah, just on the luck thing, I mean, yeah, finding a job that was based in the town where I was moving to and stuff, that definitely felt like you said, the universe was really like pulling together for me at that stage.
Well,
that was
clearly they need you to get skilled up so you could do the next bit. That's the thing, wasn't it? That's what was important. Because
yeah, there you go. Yeah.
What made you jump ship and then go and sell your own boat?
So I'd between Carbon Credentials and going it alone, I then worked for another corporate sustainability consultancy for 2 years, doing the same thing for someone different. The time was just right for me to move on. And then after 2 years there, yeah, that's when I left to go it alone. And the push there was just plateauing and wanting to do something different, wanting to be my own boss, wanting to try it. As anyone who has ever gone self-employed knows, it's terrifying. You don't know what to expect. You don't know if you're going to get clients. You don't know if you're going to be looking for a job again in 2 months' time, because it's all gone tits up. But, you know, I don't know if you want me to talk about this now in detail or whether we come to it later, but
most of us self-employed. I mean, most of the people I know have got themselves a job without benefits, but they thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah.
And at some point the rewards do come in greater than, but I mean, there's a long journey to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, I'm going to use that word again, and I've just told myself I shouldn't use it. I was about to say I got very lucky, but actually I didn't. So whereas before I would say I got very lucky, because I started Russ Avery Consulting Limited and I had six clients from day one and things really went really well. And I'm happy to say I never had a bad period of revenue worries or anything like that. But of course, it wasn't luck. The reason I had those clients from day one was actually due to the work the previous 6 years that I'd done at Evora and Carbon Credentials respectively, at building up my personal brand in the corporate sustainability sector as a marketer in London and the Southeast. So when I left, people were keen to pick up the phone to me because I had a 3 month notice period to work out. And when I published my a LinkedIn post saying that I was handed in my notice at Evora to go solo, and that this was in January, and I said, you know, I'll be free and going it alone from the beginning of April onwards. I built up a pipeline in those 3 months during my notice period of people who wanted to work with me. So it was brilliant.
Fantastic. Well done. Well done. And that just goes to show the power of the modern personal branding that's possible today, isn't it?
100%. I didn't really ever fully understand just how important a personal brand was to entrepreneurs, especially, but also to anyone, because obviously before I'd made the decision to go it alone, I was building up that personal brand, and you never know when you might want to do that. So even if you're currently employed by someone, having a strong personal brand and building up a presence online can only ever be a good thing, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And in some ways it's for companies concerned, for the company who employs people, it's kind of like, that's a bit awkward. But at the same token, it's a value to everybody. It keeps everybody respectable in that respect. So, yeah, I think it's really amazing.
And you know what else it does, which is not talked about as much? If you actively build your personal brand and you're kind of conscious about it and you invest time in it, which to me, by the way, looked to me, building my personal brand was LinkedIn, first and foremost. That's the channel I'm most active on. So I started publishing content to LinkedIn regularly. Just content, you know, that came naturally to me. So that's how we got connected, Paul. So I published posts about marketing and sustainability related topics in a very non-salesy way, just observations, my own thoughts, commentaries on news articles, that kind of thing. And that's nothing ever salesy. That's really important to note. Whether it was for my company I worked for or for me, it was all just what's going on in the world type stuff and my thoughts about it. What people don't talk about is what you can learn about business, life, entrepreneurship through investing time in publishing that content because of the people you meet. You know, look, I'm on a podcast now with you because of it, put it that way.
And the conversations we have, I mean, the conversations are amazing. You know, I mean, LinkedIn is for me has been one of my primary sources for podcast guests.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met some amazing people through LinkedIn.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, one of my podcast guests, and that's the weirdest story, but I mean, I was chasing Jim for over a year to come on the podcast. And he eventually said yes. And I knew why he said yes after, because he was ill. He was dying. He knew he was dying. And I got him on the podcast. And like, that's another one of those things. I mean, one of those unique things. I had a podcast that wasn't working because it takes 6 weeks for a podcast to come out. It wasn't working. And there was an audio problem. Oh, sod this. I'll deal with this. And what can I use? I'll use Jim's. And I just grabbed his podcast just by accident. I'll do that one. I got it out on the Wednesday, the guide on the Friday.
Wow.
It's like, you know, and he was so delighted to hear his podcast. Oh, thanks. He was so funny. I mean, this man met four presidents. Now, how would I ever meet someone who met four US presidents if I didn't have access to LinkedIn?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm such a huge advocate for the platform. I really am. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of in-person events as well, there's a similar story there. The one that springs to mind immediately was an event called Entrepreneur Business Live in London. And it was, so it would have been 2018. It was an absolutely sweltering day, like 35 degrees, the kind of day where the last thing you want to do is get on a train and go up to London, like, honestly. But, and I just thought, oh, it's cost me a tenner, I think it was. I'll sack it off. I really can't be bothered. But no, I forced myself to go. I was like, you never know who I could meet. I got on the train, sweating buckets, went up to London, went to the event, met some brilliant people who I'm still connected with today, including someone from the States who happened to be in London for just that day. So came to the event and stuff. And it's just crazy. It's just about putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
And knowing who you can meet. And none of those people I met, there's been no transactional relationship there either. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about people that have become clients. I'm talking about other people, say, you know, Richard Moore, the guy that put on the event, it's his event series. He's just become a great social media connection who I know, who's a great guy, who I learn a lot from. And he's just a lovely guy. And I'm a big ambassador for him and his events. I met a lady called Lila Smith there. That's the American that I mentioned. And she was over in London, and she's a brilliant person who kind of works in communications as well, helping people to say things better. And, you know, it's just a great world we live in, where social media relationships can be taken offline at events, and you can meet people from the other side of the world. You might never meet them in person, and they can still be a friend, you know, really. It's just great. Yeah, just put yourself out there, and then luck kind of happens to you.
I think we need to be careful, because you and I could get geeked out on this. We're getting all markety, I notice. It happens. But...
And don't forget, you've got specific questions to ask.
Well, we're still on that first question, actually. So where is the, I mean, obviously you're now in sustainability and you work with companies. I mean, do you want to say what kind of work you do with people?
Yeah, sure. I will. So I am still a marketer. So I'm a marketer for sustainability businesses. And, you know, I call myself the sustainability marketing guy. Not because I came up with that myself, but because someone introduced me at an event one as, oh, have you met Russ? He's the sustainability marketing guy. And I thought, that's perfect. That is definitely part of my personal brand now, because someone else.
So many people have this where other people name them. They go, oh, I hadn't thought about that. I'll use that one.
Yeah. I mean, I jumped on that straight away. I was like, that's perfect. So that became literally the tagline under my Russ Avery logo, the sustainability marketing guy. And I've stuck it to this day. But sorry, to your question, yes, I'm a marketer for sustainable businesses. I'm not a sustainability consultant, which a lot of people mistake me for, because that's something completely
different. I had actually. So you don't help people become sustainable. You market those people who already are.
I either market the people that already are, or the businesses that are starting their journey and want to be. Right. But I'm not a sustainability consultant, which is someone who helps businesses to operate more sustainably and reduce their carbon footprint, etc.
There's a gray area in all this, isn't there? There's people that help people appear to be sustainable
so if anyone, that's a really good point you raise, actually, Paul. So what I absolutely don't do 100% is any greenwashing. So if a company comes to Tim or I, he's my business partner, with their request of how we can help them and stuff, we do our due diligence. If they're actually not a green company in any way, but they want to be saying something, they are not the client for us.
I was reading something the other day, you know, it's like, and all these carbon offset programs that are being used, and companies are jumping on the bandwagon with the carbon offset programs. Someone's done some calculations and they reckon we've actually used up most of the earth actually in carbon offset planning. There isn't more space to plant any more trees in carbon offset planning. You know, all the planning that they plan to do, or they're going to do, unless you're going to start planting on the place we're going to. So it really is interesting. You know, this offset, everyone, I've offset. You know, okay, now I'm free. I'll carry on now.
No, yeah, that's offsetting is a really, really.
I mean, it's
great
a valid career. Thing to do to offset, probably. But it's like, but obviously, no one's actually running the calculator to see how much offset is possible.
No, it needs to be done properly with proper companies
it's not being managed, is it? It's not being managed by anyone who's really tallying it. The company's set up to do offset, and then they sell offset, and they, you know, put a bit of forest in somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a lot to be fixed here, isn't there, really? But anyway, look, I don't get on my bloody soapbox. I'll get off my soapbox. So where's the passion in all of this for you? Is it the sustainability? Is it the marketing? Because you're geeky on marketing. I can hear the passion. I can hear the passion in that conversation.
Yeah, it's both, which is why I can honestly look you in the eye and say that I have found my ikigai, if you like, because I've found what I'm going to forget the circles now, but I've basically found what the world wants. What the world needs.
Yep.
What people are willing to pay for. So what I can get paid for, and what I love doing. And then that thing in the middle is your purpose, your why. So I enjoy marketing. I love it. Like you said, I geek out for it. My passion is sustainability and tackling the climate crisis and the biodiversity crisis. And there's a huge need for that. So I can get paid for doing that. I'm so lucky. I love what I do. I can get paid for doing what I love. So the passion is both of the things. It's marketing and sustainability. And I'm happy to say that, you know, there's an increase in demand for our services because that's the bad side, because the state of the world is getting worse. And as a result, there are more and more companies who are now recognizing that fact and who are wanting to operate sustainably, as in legitimately sustainably, not companies that just want a bit of greenwash. Yeah. And therefore they're coming to people like Tim and I at Avery and Brown for our services, because they don't just want to go to any marketing agency. They want to go to a marketing agency that specifically works with sustainable focused businesses. You know what? I am closer to it because I literally work in the sector every day. I feel like we have finally reached a bit of a tipping point where actually businesses really are waking up now and they do get it. And when you say that, I don't mean everyone, because still got huge global corporates who are destroying the planet. But actually, the sustainable business movement is massive now. Massive.
To put my hand up fairly for those people, you know, I would say the issue of large things, that they are like bloody great big ships that have an expectation to deliver a certain thing to their shareholders and to everyone else. And they cannot just stop the ship.
No.
They cannot just go, we're not doing this now. Oh, sorry, guys, we can't pay our dividends this year. And I appreciate that's the situation. But they have had long enough to do something about it.
They have had long enough, right. So quickly on that point, the good stuff that's happening there is some huge investment firms and stuff like that taking ESG seriously now. So ESG being environmental, social and governance, which is often used now in a business.
The money taps are being turned off. They're going to have to make some decisions because they're going to lose investors.
Absolutely. So there are investors now who are actually looking for companies which have got good ESG credentials and criteria. Otherwise they're going to pull the plug, like you said, and stop money going in. So that's a major driver. Obviously, everything still is driven by finance. So now that some huge banks and investment firms are beginning to take ESG seriously, we will start to see the needle move a bit, and then smaller businesses will hopefully follow suit. But actually it's the smaller businesses that are going to have been doing it for longer anyway. But what I mean is then we'll see wider global industry change.
I think there's massive opportunity in all of this for lots of smaller businesses, because the bigger business can't operate that quickly, whereas the smaller ones can shift and turn faster.
Absolutely. And you know, it has been proven now, and this isn't a new thing anymore, that sustainability, operating sustainably, and profitability are not mutually exclusive all.
Indeed.
You can operate more sustainably and be more profitable. I mean, that is fact.
Yeah.
And what also is helping the cause is when people like high profile people like Mark Carney, the former governor of the Bank of England, stand up and say things like companies which don't take the climate crisis seriously will go bankrupt. I mean, that's like awesome. Yeah. That's gold dust, because big fat cat CEOs will listen to someone like Mark Carney.
Yeah.
Whereas they won't listen to people like me. So that's also really helpful. So we need more of that. It is happening. No, it's not happening as quickly as we would all like, and maybe it never will. We've technically got just under 9 years left to meet the sustainable development goals. So is that going to happen by 2030?
The carbon budget, I know it's pretty close, isn't it? The warming, but there we go. That's another conversation. Let's not get into this one. So clearly you are a passionate gentleman on this subject. So tell me, let's move our question on. What do you do about, what success mean to you? How do you define success?
Yeah, it's a great one. So I definitely used to be similar to a lot of people, I would say. And when I just left uni, success to me would have been had a figure attached to it.
Well,
definitely.
It had to be, because you're trying to build your sustainability. So your success at that point is sinking the job you need to survive, obviously.
Yeah. So yeah, that's true. So it success to me would have used to have meant that, and I used to be a lot more materialistic about possessions and stuff, which I'm totally not anymore, which won't surprise anyone. But success to me now maybe it sounds a bit cheesy, because, like, you know, I'm 36 and I feel like I am successful because I wake up every day and I do what I enjoy doing, and I've got enough money in the bank. The pipeline's looking healthy. I've got a roof over mine and my family's head. My kids aren't going hungry. So honestly, when I got into the sector and completely changed my mindset and stuff 11 years ago, and stopped wanting anything flashy or anything like that. Success is waking up every day, living with purpose, really trying to help our clients through great marketing to do more of the work that they do so that they can have a greater positive impact on the planet. Because our clients, by the way, are, we've got a small renewable energy consultancy client. They're doing amazing things and we're helping them to grow actively, whereby they can do, you know, they can do more of the good work that they're doing. It's great. Loving it. Absolutely loving what I do at the moment.
That's all it needs, isn't it, really? I mean, you know, success. I mean, that's the point, though, is that you do know what success means to you. That's the point, because a lot of people have not got a clue what success looks like.
And I'll be completely honest with you, which I always am, because, you know, authenticity is a big thing for me. But do I want more money? Well, actually, yes, because I still haven't achieved some of the things that I want in life that money can buy, like, you know, I work in sustainability. Do I want to live in my dream eco house? Yes, I absolutely do. So I would love to, you know, that's definitely a life goal for me, is to live in a the forever home, you know. Yes. a really super, super energy efficient eco home, which we would then live in forever somewhere, like nice plot of land somewhere. Mm. So yes, I want money like a lot of people do, but it's to do very specific things with. It's not so I can buy a Ferrari, you know?
Yeah, I always remember the funniest thing that ever happened in my career when I was in corporate. My boss always wanted a Porsche. He was a man who was my age at the time, and we'd just been taken over by a large company, and the Dutch director said, Bill, have what you like. And he says, Bill, have the Porsche. So he bought this Porsche for, you know, and the thing was, within the first month, he had a speeding ticket on it. And then, so whenever you went anywhere, he'd give you the keys because he was too afraid of getting another speeding ticket. And then the reality of owning a Porsche came was the fact that every time he passed a fuel station, he'd get pulled into the fuel station because he needed fuel. And then the reality was that he couldn't get his grandkids in it, so it spent the weekends in the warehouse, and he took the company bus home so he could actually with his kids. And then at the end of the year, he ended up having to write a £7,000 check for the tax man for the tax on the car. So needless to say, this Porsche was a lovely idea. It was a dream, and he didn't fulfill its promise.
You know what? Only just because we're talking about it very quickly, out of all the luxury things that you can buy when you're wealthy, I've got to say I have never understood fast cars ever. I've never understood them. If anyone's listening to this who is a petrol head and loves their fast cars, I've just never understood why you would spend, you know, the amount that you can buy a really nice house for on a car that does 250 miles an hour when you can't drive it at anywhere near those speeds legally anyway. Like, it just the mind boggles, seriously.
Yeah, but there are quite a few probably industries and things that the mind boggles around, and that we could, you know, because both of us are sustainability people, so you know, those sort of things don't mean anything to us, and that's probably why we struggle with them. But yeah, anyway, that's one of those sidelines that I often end up on a podcast. It's my podcast. I can do what I like.
Yeah, you can.
So look, let's move on. Contribution. What's your contribution to the world?
Okay. Great question. So I think a lot of what I do directly through the work that I do, my contribution to the world would be, trouble is it's so intangible, isn't it? Because I can't measure the positive impact of the work we do to help our clients grow and then what their positive impact as a result.
But you know, if they're growing, they must be doing more work in the world. So therefore you can actually, if you can genuinely say they did that because of my help.
Yeah, we can definitely say that, which feels great to be able to say. And I guess actually, you know, you saying that just now, Paul, made me think about a different angle, which is, you know, we've helped some companies grow from being quite small to scaling. So, you know, actually they've helped to employ people off the back of our support as well. So there's an economic side to it there. And, you know, they're not just employing anyone, because they're sustainable businesses, so they're employing other people that want to be change makers and work for planet positive companies, you know. But yeah, it would be cool to have a it'd be cool to see that invisible, impossible metric of the environmental tangibles that everything we've done in the last 11 years since I've been working in sustainability has resulted in. But the other side of the question I was going to answer would be, we haven't mentioned it yet, so I'm also a community builder, and I'm really passionate about that as well. So building communities. So I've done that in multiple different ways, both online and off. Online, you know, started on LinkedIn again, coming back to LinkedIn. So you'll remember, Paul, when LinkedIn groups actually used to be a thing before they died a death. Probably.
Well, we've never had this. This is, I live in too rural an area to do a LinkedIn group, because there's too few of us about. So
no, I don't mean the off person one. I mean the actual LinkedIn.
Oh, actual groups. Oh yeah. I remember them, but they just became spam fests.
Yeah. So they became spam fests. But there was a time when LinkedIn groups were actually a thing that worked, and that was my first foray into kind of building a community. I had a couple of sustainability LinkedIn groups that I used to. Manage and stuff, but then, as you said, they became spam fests. Then I founded LinkedIn Local Farnham here in Farnham, which is now a local community of 280 people strong, which I now co-host with Tim, my business partner, and we have brought local businesses and local entrepreneurs together in a completely informal networking, non-salesy event, because that is why I set it up. So very, very quickly, the background there is that when I went solo in 2018, I looked for what local networking events there were in Farnham and the surrounding area. And I went to what was the only one in Farnham. And it was really cliquey, really salesy, really transactional, really stuffy. And I was like, this is not for me. So you pretty much have two options at that point. You can either go and complain about it, that there are no good networking events in your area, or you can be the change maker and set up your own one.
Yep.
So I chose the latter and created LinkedIn Local Farnham. And it's everything that event isn't. So it's really informal. It's really friendly. It's really supportive. It's all about the community and making new friends and meeting other people. And of course, the beauty of it is, what happens as a result? Actually, probably more people in our community do business with each other than they do in that stuffy sales one. Because probably. They've got to know each other as people.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant.
I mean,
it's
the advantage you have in that space, I mean, Farnham is probably quite a large space, isn't it? I mean, Farnham's got a big air, big, isn't it a big air industry here, Farnham?
Farnborough is.
Farnborough, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, which is just up the road, yeah.
Okay.
So, Farnborough's got the Farnborough Air Show and Farnborough Airport, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, Farnham, how big an air, I mean, the catchment area must be quite large, I guess, isn't it, in terms of population-wise?
The catchment area is reasonably large. I think, don't quote me on this, I think Farnham's maybe got 30,000 population or something like that.
That's smaller than I thought it was, actually. I think I thought it was going to be much bigger than that.
Yeah, no, so I don't think it's much bigger than that. The catchment area, I guess, is reasonably big with the surrounding towns and villages, but actually... off LinkedIn Local Farnham has spawned LinkedIn Local Guildford, LinkedIn Local Alton and Borden, and LinkedIn Local Hartley Whitney. But we were the first one in the kind of in that Surrey and Hampshire area. And, and then people came to that and realized that they could set up ones in their own town. So it's been a really great catalyst for what is probably a total community of now, I guess, closer to 500 people.
Contribution. You obviously are a connector of people.
Yeah, I love connecting people. That is a contribution as well. So I have facilitated introductions. And the reason I like doing it is because people have done it for me before.
Yeah.
And it might sound a bit cheesy, but it is a way of paying that forward. And it's a really nice thing to do. When you can facilitate an introduction between two people who were exactly the right kind of people that were looking to connect with each other for whatever reason, whether it was sales or a collaboration opportunity, or you looking for your next great podcast guest, whatever it is, connecting people is just such an awesome thing.
It always takes the edge off, doesn't it? Because when you introduce two people together, you've both got that commonality of that person, and you trust the connector. And so therefore there's trust automatically implicitly given in a way because of that shared trust.
Absolutely. Contribution, is the work side of it, and that knock-on effect on helping to tackle the climate and biodiversity crises and just someone who...
And the beauty of it is, doing that you do, you're really, really flying the flag for sustainability in that process, because obviously you're what you are. And I don't suppose you could actually string a sentence together, really, without mentioning the word sustainability, could you, really?
I can't really. And actually, you make a great point, Paul, because something that's really inadvertently happened as the hosts of LinkedIn Local Farnham and doing what Tim and I do at Avery and Brown, being a digital marketing and creative agency for sustainable businesses, is that a lot of people have become interested in what that actually means and what being a sustainable business means. And they've asked us what being a B Corporation means. So we've ended up using that completely non-deliberately as a kind of educational vehicle for the sustainable business movement. So now there's 280 people in Farnham and the surrounding area who know a lot more about sustainability and sustainable business than they did 2 years ago, you know?
Yeah. Brilliant. So I get to that question. This is the strange question, the one that you don't know about. What's the one question you'd like people to ask you?
That's a good one. Okay, I love it. You didn't ask me what the average person can do to live more sustainably.
Good question. I'd be interested in your take on it.
Okay, so my take on that enormous question, which again would be another whole 10 podcast.
Yes, it would be. A podcast on its own.
Yes, you're right. Just the whole podcast. Easily. My take on that question after 11 years of working in sustainability is that we all just need to consume less, because that's what it's really all about. And by less, I really do mean in everything. We need to consume less food. We need to buy less stuff. That great word, just stuff, like whether it's books, gadgets, CDs, DVDs, clothes. We just need to buy less stuff. We need to consume less. We need to consume less energy, less resources. Living more sustainably starts there, starts with less. And the good thing is that I want to tell to anyone listening to this is don't be worried about where you are now and comparing yourself to others. Start your journey. So you might start, it's going to be completely different for every household and every individual. And that's brilliant. That's absolutely fine. So to one family, it might be like, we are going to start eating less red meat. We're going to make a real conscious effort to start eating less red meat. Another family might be like, we're going to stop flying and we'll start taking our holidays in the UK now. Another family might make a really conscious effort to buy less single-use plastic. Just start somewhere. Don't worry about being perfectly sustainable or something like that, because no such thing even exists. So then you're aiming towards an unattainable goal. Just start your journey, small steps, learn, like educate yourself, which is now really easy thanks to the internet and podcasts and videos and stuff. There's so much stuff out there about living more sustainably. And read, educate yourself, listen to things, watch videos, and start your journey of consuming less stuff and living a more, and you know, I'm not even going to say minimalist, because that then what people think when they hear that word is living in a house where you've literally got three possessions and you know, stuff like that. And I'm not talking about that, because you know, I'd show you around my house and there'd be loads of crap in it that we don't need, because we're on a journey as well, and we're not living a perfectly sustainable life.
The thing that really gets me on the sustainability journey, or on the is the supermarkets, like Valentine's weekend is a classic example. You know, yeah. Valentine's was entirely a commercial, you know, it's a commercial opportunity to sell stuff this weekend.
Yeah. And, you know,
and it's mainly crap that will get bought and put in the bin on Monday.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately, Christmas is the same.
Christmas is the same. Yeah.
Yes. Christmas
crackers.
Christmas crackers. Don't even get me started.
Just, absolutely. I mean, like, I'm not going to. We can't go here. We mustn't go here. We could get on a real journey here. But yeah, this is the stuff.
So really quickly, because I know we can't go down that rabbit hole. Really quickly, the reason Christmas crackers is a great example is, so when you're buying stuff now, everyone listening to this, like, just really think about what you're buying, what joy it will bring you, and what is actually going to happen to it. Because as you will know, a Christmas cracker, the entirety of it, the stuff that makes the cracker itself, which is going to be, it's going to have cardboard in it, it's going to have plastic in it that makes the shiny wrapping paper that's on it, and then the toy inside it, which is funny for all of maybe 3 seconds or something when you open it, then goes in the bin when you clean up Christmas dinner. And where does that go? It goes into landfill. Brilliant. What was the point in that? You know, if people can just be more, start to be more conscious about that, real change can happen.
Yeah.
And, to just finish this bit on that quote that I love, because it's just so apt, is the world doesn't need a handful of people living perfectly sustainably. It needs billions of us living imperfectly sustainably, you know, and just doing what we can to effect mass change on a big scale.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Tell me about what kind of people you want to speak to, because this is your little promotional bit that you have on the podcast. Well, who do you like to connect with you, and what can you do for them?
In a business context, and it's nice being asked this question, I literally never pitch or promote myself, so it's actually something different to do. In a business context, I'm looking to speak to typically owners of small to medium-sized businesses who are operating in some sort of sustainable related field, whether they're, to name, you know, to give an example of some of our clients, a renewable energy consultancy or a sustainability consultancy. I'm looking to connect with those people who are maybe, they're not growing as quickly as they would like or feel like they deserve to be, or they're not known by as many of their target audience as they feel they deserve to be based on what they're doing, because they're the kind of companies that we A, love working with, and B, can help. So if you have a sustainable product or service that you feel needs to be heard more and should be making more sales, then I'd love to hear from you, because that's exactly the kind of company that Tim and I like to support.
And you work internationally?
Yes. Our biggest client is in Germany.
Okay. Well, this podcast has got quite a big US following, so you never know.
You never know. There you go.
So how would they find you? Obviously LinkedIn, because you've already mentioned LinkedIn. Any other places? You have a website people can go to?
Website is averyandbrown.com. I am at the Russ Avery on Twitter, Instagram, and Clubhouse. So nice and easy to remember.
Okay. Well, those links will be on the podcast show notes and at the website Life, Fashion, and Business as per usual. So now we reach that final question, which is the big question that we all at some stage in our life have to have an answer to, or I guess don't, but it is interesting to try and kind of explore it. What is the meaning of life for you?
Such a cheeky question to end on.
Well, it is, you know, I mean, it's like a lot of people never spend the time thinking about it. But I think when you have an answer to this question, it does actually bring everything else into focus.
The reason why it's such a great question is because you can think about it till the end of time. Or you can actually think, well, I've got to, let's say someone made me come to an answer. I think the meaning of life is to live a happy life in which you do good. So where you help other people and where you collaborate. And maybe there's never been a more a better time to ask that question because of everything the world faces now. Because actually, see, I didn't think I'd be able to tie it back so nicely, Paul, if I'm honest, but now the best, we will only successfully tackle the climate emergency, the climate crisis and the biodiversity crisis through collaboration. That is a fact. We will never do it unless we all collaborate with each other and cooperate. So in terms of helping each other and stuff, you know, maybe that's now the meaning of life, is to see if we can overcome the ridiculous mess that we've created for ourselves, because it is a human mess. So
yeah, it is a human mess, that's for sure. And
time will tell.
Time will tell. Yeah. Well, good answer. Thank you so much. Russ Avery, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure to have this conversation, and we avoided the rabbit holes, which was good. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Paul. Best. I've had a great time. Thanks so much for having me.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Russ Avery. Now, if you'd like to connect with Russ, you can find him at averyandbrown.com. You can also find him on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram and Twitter. And if you are on the Apple platform, you will also find him on Clubhouse at The Russ Avery. And I know I say this every week, but if you are on the Apple world, please leave us a review there, because it really, really helps. Now, if you've been following my podcast for the last few weeks, you will know that I am doing some research into podcast listening habits. And why we listen to podcasts, particularly interview-based podcasts. If you are an avid listener of this podcast or other podcasts on the interview with an interview structure, I would really like to hear from you. Please use the links above in the show notes either to do our listener survey or get in touch with me, because I would love to have a conversation with you. All of the links for Russ Avery and the podcast survey are on the show notes above and can be found at lifepassionandbusiness.com on this podcast underneath the player. So as always, I appreciate your time and attention. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you later. All the best.